It's a lot easier to sell flat-screen TVs with 50 or 60 monitors on the floor, all playing the same moving images. Whatever the image is, skiers, dancers, or even just a person doing a weather report, there's something magically eye-catching about the repetition of it, the exact sync of it all. In that case, it's an easy way to get people's attention. It's a little like the Rockettes, except that for precision dancers and drummers and parading marching musicians, it's not so easy. In fact, any time you have people doing or saying things in unison, it can be difficult to achieve and extremely dramatic.
Great Oracle, sounding the grace of Zeus, what omen do you bear for burnished Thebes from Delphi's shrine of gold?
In the creative cultural universe, it goes back a long way. You think of the Greek chorus, all speaking the same words in unison, and in some cases choreographed to move together as well.
What expiation? What wrench of custom must I meet?
In a way, it increases the possibilities of expression by having more people than one individual.
Tom Vasiliadis, theater and movement director and department chair at the New School, points out that in Greek theater, the use of the chorus was connected to the theme.
The Greeks looked at the society of the collective. They were saying something about their world, their beliefs, their philosophies, and so on.
In addition to all that, it was a technique, a powerful way to say something, a kind of special effect.
Even though it's a chorus, the individuals in the chorus are not on the same pitch.
Whirling away like burning cinders snatched on the wind.
So that you're able to hear what they're saying in a fuller range, so to speak.
In classical ballet, you could say the equivalent of the Greek chorus is the corps de ballet, the group of dancers who often act as a unison ensemble, playing behind and against the soloists. It's part of the vocabulary of dance, that line of dancers, all costumed the same way, all on point, all turning at the same moment.
There's always a structure that leads to moments that are in unison. It's something that we all learn to use in the right moments, you know.
Principal dancer and choreographer Benjamin Millepied of the New York City Ballet points to one particular master who taught choreographers a lot about how to use movements together and separately.
I think Balanchine explored group work in a very thorough fashion. He just had this absolute masterful ability to work with a group and large groups.
Millepied says Balanchine had an instinct and a brilliance in knowing exactly when to vary a group of dancers' movements in complex ways, and then when to relieve the tension by having them all dance the same steps together.
He always knew when to come back to unison. It can be very effective.
Technically, unison is really a music term. And it doesn't just mean together. It means many voices or instruments singing or playing exactly the same notes. Go back to Gregorian chant, religious music from the Latin Church, and unison is what it's all about. A beautiful 19th century example is one section of the Verdi Requiem. Verdi starts by putting together a high and a lower voice, just like the Greek chorus, singing the same plaintive melody. Then he has the whole chorus do the same thing. No harmony, no accompanying instruments. So then, when he finally changes to a minor mode and he does bring in other voices, instruments, and harmonies, it's explosive. In a quiet way, of course. Contrast, says Michael Beckerman, chair of the NYU Music Department, is all.
We know that unisons have an extraordinary power in sort of Western classical music because primarily, unlike almost every other style in the world, it's not a unison style. The convention, if anything, that is multiple voices often moving in various different directions was considered a kind of signpost of musical high culture, then the unison, which in effect turns its back on that, becomes an extremely powerful tool.
Once you become aware of it, it turns up in the most interesting places. At the front of the famous Bach D minor concerto, for example. Bach, the master of fugues and counterpoint and multiple interlocking melodies, starts the piece by having everybody, including the keyboard soloist, playing exactly the same thing. You hear it when Oscar Peterson's two hands together do the most astonishing things. Two hands playing the same melody. That's unison, too. And who could forget this musical moment?
Whoa, this is striking. This is like a drum roll or something like this. This is an odd way to catch the ear, and that becomes, you know, maybe the most single conspicuously powerful moment in Western music. It's a unison.
Unison is a technique, and it's a spectacle. And when we see it, it takes hold. After all, fish do it, birds do it. There's a whole body of scientific study around synchrony and unison. But when humans do it, for the sake of art or drama, it's not exactly a natural phenomenon. It's the product of endless hours of thought, practice, timing, and skill. And it's irresistible, whether you're watching it, hearing it, or doing it.
Because people have their own internal tempo and rhythm, and getting them to come together in that way, that's part of the rush, the buzz, the high, when it actually works. Because, oh my gosh, we've actually done it.
Beethoven, Bach, and Balanchine knew it, and so do parade marchers and TV stars. There can be cultural magic in multiples, in unison and sync. For WNYC, I'm Sarah Fischko. We'll be right back.